Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit. Bandwidth for the new screensavers is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com. The new screensavers is brought to you by Rocket Mortgage from Quicken Loans. When it comes to the big decision of choosing a mortgage lender, work with one that has your best interest in mind. Use Rocket Mortgage for a transparent, trustworthy home loan process that's completely online at QuickenLoans.com/NSS. And by Curry, a real live robot with a great personality. Curry is available for pre-order now at HeyCurry.com. That's HeyCurry.com. And by Blue Apron, the number one fresh ingredient and recipe delivery service in the country. See what's on the menu this week and get three meals free with your first purchase and free shipping by going to blueapron.com/NSS.
The Ultimate Mesh Network Showdown. Fujifilm's medium format camera and HP's 34-inch all-in-one PC. Live from the Twit Eastside Studios in beautiful Petaluma, it's the new Screensavers.
Welcome to the new Screensavers. Good to see you. I'm Leo Laporte, and oh my God, in person, I've never met you.
No, this is the first time. I'm so excited and terrified.
You look a lot like Georgia Dow of iMore.
I feel a lot like Georgia Dow.
So nice to see you. So, welcome. You're visiting.
Thank you.
Because you went to the CocoCon at Yosemite, right, with
yes.
your husband Anthony.
Yes, yeah, got to speak
fun.
There. It was beautiful and amazing. Oh. And then I get to do this, which is also amazing.
Well, thanks to both of you for coming up here. I guess you're going to get a little wine country in and stuff
we'll,
like that.
We'll do a little bit
enjoy
of
the scenery.
Cheese, some everything. Wine.
All right. Well, because Georgia works for iMore, she's a Mac expert. We've got a lot of Mac questions for you, Georgia. So get ready. We're going to do this. This is going to be a fun show. We're going to talk about why Wi-Fi sucks. We've got a mercenary sysadmin, his own description, and the guy who wrote the article you keep hearing me quote from Ars Technica on Wi-Fi, on why Wi-Fi is so bad. He's going to explain it all. We're going to take a little tour of the new mesh systems and why they work better, what's going on there. Father Robert has, I think, very well-named new computer from HP. It's the Envy all-in-one. And if you had this, you would be the envy of your friends. It is gorgeous. We'll see if it's a decent computer. Then we're going to talk about a camera that nobody can afford, but everybody wants. Dan Bercaglia will join us from DP Review with the new Fujifilm mirrorless medium format camera. It's going to be interesting. Nathan Olivares-Giles has a review of the NVIDIA Shield, the new generation. My favorite Android TV, and it's even better. He'll talk about that. Megan Maroney helps you exfiltrate, I think would be the word, your data from Facebook. So there's a lot of good stuff coming up. But first, let's start with the news of the week. Are you happy to be here?
I'm so excited.
It's so nice to
see
you
here.
It's
sorry,
so funny.
I'm overly excited. I can't help myself.
Georgia's been on Twit many times, on MacBreak Weekly many times, but because you're in Canada, we've just never met. And so it's really nice to have you here. Thank you for making the trip.
Thank you
I appreciate
so much
it.
For having
this
me.
Is a big week. There were lots to talk about in our news. A lot of Apple stuff. Do you have the new red iPhone yet?
I don't have the new iPhone. It's absolutely beautiful.
You've seen it because Renee has one,
Renee
right?
has one. He's
By the way,
just...
Renee's watching your children?
Yes, Renee's watching my kids. They're probably watching right now. Hi.
Are you crazy? They're going to come back reading comic books, kickboxing.
Writing articles. Playing Pokemon. They're not going to want to come home.
Yeah, the worst habit they're going to pick up is Apple Watch bands.
That's true. He has a mountain of Apple Watch bands.
You have the nicest one, though. This is the Hermes Double Tour.
Double Tour.
Wow. Is that, you know what? I kind of mocked that when I saw it.
Did you mock it?
But it looks good on you. It's
Thank
very,
you.
It's stylish, isn't it?
It's stylish. It's fun. It's very comfortable.
Yeah.
And stays in place. So.
Are you tempted by, I have just, you know, I like these nylon ones.
Do you like the nylon
and
ones?
And they've released a whole bunch of new colors. They feel very much like you shouldn't wear them after Labor Day, kind of. They're very, they're like to match your white belt and white shoes, kind of, you know what
yeah,
I mean?
I'm not as into the nylon because it, there's no tapering that comes onto the edge, and so it's just kind of, it looks a little bit more harsh, and so...
Megan didn't like it for the same reason. She says it digs into her wrist a little bit.
And it's a little bit uncomfortable.
It's a sharp edge.
Yeah, but they're nice if you want to color coordinate. They're really nice.
Well, that's kind of why, I, you know, so I have the black and white. But they have a bunch of new colors, pink and whatever camellia is. They've now got camellia. In, you know, that's a color. Because camellias, last time I checked, they could be red, they could be white, they could be blue. I don't know what color a camellia is, but that's one of the colors Apple's offering. iPhone red, that's for product red.
Yes, that's for product red, so... It's going to a good cause.
It is kind of pretty. What do you think about the white face? That's the only thing I'm not crazy about.
I would prefer it to be, like, I think it's very Canadian with the red and white, but I would prefer that it had, like, a red instead of white facing on it as well, just like with the black iPhone. But I like it. When you turn it around, it looks really stunning, and I think it's a nice...
Somebody said that MKBHD, who has a red one, has figured out how to put a black face on instead of a white face. Is he gluing something onto it? There it is.
That looks
prettier.
Nice.
What
that
do you
looks
think?
Nicer.
Yeah.
I like it better with the black face,
$14 screen protector, he says. All right. Yeah.
And
I might
have to do,
that.
The applying the screen protector without any bubbles and have to go through all of that.
Apple has also announced, and Lauren Good had the kind of the walkthrough, the new Clips app,
right.
Which I don't know if I really get either. That's a social sharing app that's not connected to any social network.
Yes, yes. It's just a nice, cute way to be able to make your own little movies and clips that you can send out.
You could put text on there. You could put different filters.
It's the live titles that I think really makes the change, is because, like, a lot of times when we're using our watching a video, you know, I'm in a public place or my husband's already asleep, so I have to turn off the sound. And it's nice to be able to find an easy way that you can just dictate, and then it becomes titles on the screen. And I think that that's a nice way.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
So I would shoot a video of me talking, and then it would automatically take what I said and edit the video to match it and put titles behind it.
Yes. And you can do that during the video, or you could do it afterwards.
Or do it during and then correct it. Probably you have to some cleanup and stuff
like that. Yeah. Well, you can do it either way. So you can even do it at the end when you've edited everything together. And it makes it easy and simple, and it's
like
not...
this one, the Dress to Impress.
Exactly.
So he's going to walk us through wearing a bow tie, and it automatically captions it.
Yes.
Wow.
Yes.
Or I'll be playing with that. That's something Al Jazeera started to do on Facebook, because people noted that the Facebook's auto started, but there was silent, as you point out.
Yeah.
Twitter does this too now. They'll play, but there's no audio. So if you put the text in, people will actually sit and watch the video, even though they can't hear it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's smart. All right. Well, that's coming out in April. That's the good news for Apple. The bad news for Apple is that the Turkish, what is it called? The Turkish hacker family? I think that's what they're called, the Turkish hacker family, which is a terrible name. Because I don't think they're Turkish, and I know they're not a family. They claim half a million...
Turkish crime family,
even better.
It's more ominous.
They're right about the crime part. They have half a million, they say, iCloud credentials, logins, and passwords. And they've gone to Apple and said, if you don't pay us a lot of money by April 7th, we are going to not release this database, but we're going to hack in. It's a quarter million. Oh, big difference. We're going to hack in, and we're going to erase everybody's iPhone. Because, you know, if I had your iCloud account, I could erase your iPhone, right?
You could, yeah.
That's a pretty good threat. So ZDNet went to them, the Turkish crime family, and they're probably not Turkish, and they're certainly not a family, but they probably are criminals. And so it's one out of three, ain't bad. And, in fact, that's about what they got. They asked them for a demonstration that these were actual credentials. They got the Turkish crime family gave them 54. ZDNet, to their credit, tried to validate them. They said all 54 accounts were valid based on a check using Apple's password reset function. And then they reached out to the 54 people and said, can we talk to you? Only 10 responded. Those 10, though, confirmed, yes, this is our password. It's not clear in the article whether they talked to more than 10 and only 10 said it's our password, or they only got 10. Anyway, 10 people in total confirmed the passwords. So they're real passwords, real iCloud accounts. So that's cause for concern. But it was only 54 out of the total alleged 250,000. And they were all from the UK. Whether that means the Turkish crime family only has UK ones or are these just that's the pool they got is unknown. The most concerning thing is people kind of Apple says, no, we've not been breached. They must have gotten this data from somewhere else. You know, people reuse passwords. So maybe I guess the hackers, you know, got a database, then matched it up to see how many of these were iCloud accounts and came down with these 250,000 and said, these are iCloud accounts. These are the ones we're going to, you know, hack. But Apple said, we weren't breached. Here's the thing that's concerning. According to one of the 10 people that ZDNet talked to, this password was only used on iCloud. So that sounds like maybe iCloud was breached. Anyway, we don't know what's going to happen with that. But the advice everybody should be listening to at this point is change your password.
Change your password.
And turn on two-factor.
Which is always a good idea.
Yeah.
Everyone should do that. Plus, it was really interesting because they asked for what was $75,000 in Bitcoin or $100,000 in iTunes as their what they wanted.
Hey,
gift cards. It's
slow when you're having Turkish crime family night and you want to have some movies to watch.
There's all those really cool apps. They might be looking at, you know, something to get. So
bizarre. What would they couldn't even, how would you use that without getting caught?
They'd probably give them away. There'd be some laundering. They'd be
giving away
as gifts.
Okay.
For, I don't know.
All right.
Who knows?
Okay. Other tech news. I think this is kind of a good deal. Somebody's going to give you money. FedEx will give you a $5 credit on a $30 or more order if you enable Flash on Safari. So it turns out, you know, Apple's really hates Flash. Steve Jobs hated Flash. He said the iPhone's not going to support it. The iPad's not going to support it. And still, there are a lot of websites, including apparently FedEx, that use it, even though they're leaving out this huge group of people. Well, now Chrome 56 and later don't enable Flash, and Safari doesn't enable Flash.
Right.
And so what do you do if you're FedEx? You either fix your website or you pay people to re-enable Flash in the browser, because you can do that in the browser settings.
It seems like they'd be paying more than fixing, though. That's my thought on it.
Maybe they should try to fix it, right?
Maybe.
By the way, don't use that code. That's Anthony's. So FLA726. You'll get a code. And you have to enable Flash. So you'll get this offer if you go in Safari 10 or later or Chrome 56 or later. You will get this offer.
Now, if you disable it and then re-enable it, do you get another $5?
That's what I would do, right?
Right. I'm just wondering.
In fact, my advice.
Every single one of your machines.
Yeah, Flash is not safe. So there is a setting to re-enable it permanently. Don't do that. Re-enable it once, right?
Get your $5
and then come back later. It's a little bit weird. We should probably mention that we had talked a lot on Wednesday on This Week in Google about the fact that the Senate was poised to vote to overturn an FCC regulation from late last year that prevented Internet service providers, including wireless carriers, AT&T, Verizon, T-Mobile, Sprint, from selling your history. So your Internet service provider knows everything you do, right? Unless you use a VPN. The Senate has voted now. It was close, but they voted to overturn that regulation. And 50-48, it was that close. Mostly Republicans, obviously. They have a majority in the Senate. So that means that if the House approves, which it will, because it's also dominated by Republicans, that you will no longer have privacy protections. Your Internet service provider could collect all your Internet history and sell it to the highest bidder. Just be aware, it isn't any different than it was until about October of last year. So
right.
I don't know, you know, what this means. But the Internet service providers really wanted this to be overturned, which tells me there's a revenue stream there that they would like to capitalize on. The only way I can think of that you could avoid this is by using a VPN so that your Internet service provider couldn't see what you're doing. But then you're trusting the VPN provider not to sell your information. So at some point it has to go on the public Internet.
Yeah, and you'd think that the government would think, well, then my, you know, Internet history can also be sold.
It's very frustrating to me because it's clearly a vote for the big Internet service providers and against consumers. It's against us. And I'm just disappointed that isn't. I don't think that that's doing your constituency any favors, and it's not doing yourself a favor.
Right.
And I'm really very disappointed in that.
Because everyone trusts Comcast and Verizon.
Oh, they would never do anything.
They would never do anything wrong.
No, they would do nothing to harm us. Absolutely not.
This will be
okay. I guess you could still contact your if you're not you can't do anything about it. I'm sorry, but you're Canadian. You could call Justin and say, hey, Justin, isn't this terrible? He'd probably agree with you, but there's nothing you could do. But if you're in the U.S., you should probably call your member of Congress and say, please don't approve this.
Or let them know, what have you been surfing? Because the highest bidder could be
I like that idea.
Against you. It's dangerous.
I am, right now, I will offer $100 to Comcast, AT&T, anybody. If you've got a member of Congress's surf history, I will buy it. I will pay cash on the barrelhead. $100.
$100.
$100. That could be in your pocket right now. Oh, or I'll give you $150 in iTunes gift certificates.
It's a deal. It's a deal.
I'd be glad to do. You could watch a great movie tonight. Tons
I think that that would be the only thing they would need to have, and then they would say, you know what? I better vote no.
So terrible.
This could happen to me.
Do you really want your history exposed? Let's take a break, and then, Georgia, when we come back, we're going to talk about why Wi-Fi sucks. Because it, am I wrong?
No, it
is
really
is it better
does.
North of the 49th parallel?
No,
it's terrible
it's
everywhere.
I have my hotel story.
Oh yeah, how much are we charging you for your Wi-Fi? Like $15 a day, right?
It's well, I'm lucky in this one. It's free, but it's sad.
It's free but bad.
It's just it's sad.
Oh, this is the new thing. This is the new thing, and I won't say the name of the hotel, but these big chains do this. They say they give you free Wi-Fi and it's terrible, and then say, oh, if you'd like decent Wi-Fi, you could buy it. And then they charge you.
Right, right. Well, I was sitting in my closet trying to do a podcast. trying to do like
so
that
sorry.
Thing with my arms
I'm
out
so
to try
sorry.
To get a better signal.
I'm so sorry.
Didn't work
That's
out.
Terrible.
Didn't work out.
Our show today brought to you by Rocket Mortgage. Quicken Loans, one of the best mortgage lenders in the U.S. Year after year, they've got J.D. Power Customer Satisfaction Awards. Number one, 2010, 2011, 2012, 2013, 2014, 2015, 2016, like clockwork. So they're great. I mean, they're a great mortgage lender, but now they've done something for us geeks. They've created a mortgage approval process that's completely online. No more going to the bank or the mortgage lender, hat in hand, banker's box in hand with all that paperwork. And, you know, last time we bought our house, Lisa and I, it took a month. We gave them the initial paperwork, then they wanted more, then they wanted more, then we were faxing stuff and sending stuff and bringing stuff in. Not with Rocket Mortgage. You do it all online. You can do it from your phone. You can do it from your iPad. You can do it from your computer. You can submit all the information they need, including bank statements and pay stubs, online with a touch of a button. In fact, I love this. This the video on their website shows a couple going to an open house. You must have done this. You're looking to buy a house,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yeah.
You go in a house. You just think, I'm going to look. It's gonna. Well, you're just going to see how the neighbors live. That's all. Maybe look in their medicine cabinet. You see what they're up to. And then you go, this is a nice house, and they're only asking that much. We should buy this, honey. Well, you could go home and then go to your mortgage lender, and a month later come back and make an offer.
And the
or,
house is sold.
Yeah, and the house has been sold for weeks. Or do it all while you're there on the phone, because it's all computer, all online. You can literally get approved in minutes. And the best part about not only are you going to get approved fast, but you're going to get approved for a loan that is right for you, because they've got little buttons. You can adjust the rate and the length of your loan in real time. And literally turn this around in minutes. Whether you're refiing or buying a new house, Rocket Mortgage from Quicken Loans, quickenloans.com/NSS, equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states, NMLSconsumerAccess.org, number 3030. Rocket Mortgage from Quicken Loans.
Do I get to throw my card?
Yeah. One down.
I'm so excited.
One down. You're doing great.
I'm still here.
Take a deep breath. And now we're going to take a walk over here and find out why Wi-Fi sucks. All right. We have a great guest on. I've been talking about this article in Ars Technica ever since it came out about 3 weeks ago. And I told our team, I said, get this guy on. It's the only article I've ever read that fully explains why Wi-Fi doesn't work these days. Jim Salter is on the line. He, by his own description, is a mercenary sysadmin, a contributor to Ars Technica, an expert on networking. Hey, Jim, welcome to the new Screensavers. I appreciate you joining us.
Thanks, Leo. Glad to be here.
So why does... It's a big question.
It's a big question.
Wi-Fi worked great when it first came out. 802.11b, when we first got it, it was great. Nobody was using it. I didn't have to put wires in the wall. I was thrilled. And it just successively got worse and worse and worse. We got A, we got B, A, N, G, and now AC. And instead of getting better and faster, it's gotten worse and worse and worse. Why?
Well, from my perspective, I don't know that I would agree that it used to be fine and then it got worse. It sucked from day one.
Okay, good. I just was happy.
Trying to do much with it back then.
Yeah.
A lot of the problem is that Wi-Fi is marketed with these numbers that are basically intended to compete with wired networking and make it look like, Wi-Fi is just as good as plugging in the wire. And they're entirely different technologies with entirely different problems.
The first thing I learned from your article is that it's a collision-based network. In other words, if you can see somebody else's Wi-Fi access point, you're competing with them for airtime. If they're talking and you start your Wi-Fi access point talking, it goes, oops, sorry, and shuts up for a random period of time to let them finish.
Well, it has to. If it doesn't, then nobody gets any data across.
Then it's just shouting. Everybody's shouting. In fact, you have a great analogy. It's like being in a bar. If it's just the two of us talking, we can hear each other. People come in, they start making noise. So we raise our voice, which makes it noisier. So they raise their voice. Pretty soon, everybody's shouting and nobody's hearing.
Right. Which, luckily, that's not the way it works with Wi-Fi. With Wi-Fi, you actually have to be polite and your device has to let other devices speak. It would be worse if they didn't do that. You just have to realize that, yes, this is the case.
Well, in fact, it explains a lot to me because we won't let, for instance, we have a lot of Skype callers here on Skype. What do we always tell you? Wired, right?
Wired, yeah.
And that's because we noticed that Skype would just drop out every once in a while, and that must be why, right? It stopped transmitting.
Well, Wi-Fi is so weird compared to wired networking. Some of the tests that I run when I'm testing these devices, I have a real-time progress bar. As I'm running the test, I can see, do I have fast speed or slow speed? And literally, if my cat runs through the room, I can see the numbers dip. I'm not
really?
Kidding.
Because it's bouncing off the cat. The cat is interfering with the radio frequencies.
You get a little bit of attenuation, or maybe it changes the RF multipath. It's not a huge difference.
If I had 12 cats, it would be really bad.
How many do you
more
have?
More cats, worse thing. Well, I have two children and a dog, so I'm not sure what that counts
as. But we're all
cats,
sacks of water, which are bad for radio, right?
Correct.
Yeah.
Human body is good for about 3 dBm of attenuation.
So roughly the same as
an interior wall.
So when I'm in the hotel and I'm like trying to stick my arms out to make better Wi-Fi signal, I'm not doing a good job of that.
No, for the most part, you're just making yourself feel better because you have something to do.
Thank you. I'm happy to hear that.
And this is good because now I can tell my son, you're blocking the Wi-Fi. Get out of the way.
Right.
Just like with the TV.
I mean, you can. It's like I said, human body is about equivalent to an interior wall in terms of attenuation.
Wow. So the solution we've come up with, and I think for the most part this is a lot better, are these new mesh networks. The first one we learned about was Eero, of course, one of our sponsors, Eero. But there are many of these. The folks at Ubiquiti who created the first enterprise version of these mesh networks, or one of the early ones, now has a consumer-grade product called the Amplify. This is the Amplify HD, which I understand is a little bit faster and better. It's really cool looking. Then there's Google in the business. They have the least expensive offering. We have prices on here. This is $300 for 3 base units. And I have my Orbi. This is what I use at home. But you tell me this isn't really mesh. This is just a kind of more traditional router with a satellite unit.
Well, I hate to say that. At this point, I think mesh has effectively been defined in the consumer space as you have more than one AP and you don't have to plug wires into the other ones.
Right.
You shouldn't even try to dial it in any further than that if you're talking about consumer products.
They're not really mesh, in other words, in the way that, say, an Ubiquiti enterprise system is a mesh system.
If you want to try to get into the more professional, like Wi-Fi engineer terminology, then mesh is going to mean that you've got a complex topology and you can get back to the router more than one way. The satellites all talk to one another and they figure out their own best path. And Plume's about the only one that does that in the consumer space.
That's kind of the key on some of these is you can connect, like the Eero or the Plume, you can connect them to Ethernet. They don't just have to be a repeater of one base station. You could have multiple base stations, but it still creates one network with one SSID, one password, and the handoff is handled transparently by these devices. So that's one of the benefits of these systems?
Well, the more wired backhaul you have, the better.
Okay.
Basically, the biggest thing that will improve Wi-Fi performance is not using Wi-Fi. And plugging a wire into the back of your access point is one way to limit how much Wi-Fi you're using.
So if I'm in a, like, so I have like a three-floor home with lots of walls, what would I choose to use to be able to have my children who are now on Wi-Fi, my husband, I, we both use quite a lot of bandwidth, and like the walls are kind of like this plaster wood kind of thing. What would I choose to go with in that type of a scenario?
You've got a couple of options there. If you've got the old plaster, like lathe type of walls, worse, the ones with the chicken wire in them are, you know,
they have metal. There's metal in the walls. It's like a Faraday cage.
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly.
You've got two approaches. One would be Orbi, like Leo's got, which Orbi has just a ridiculously high signal strength and may be able to punch through those walls.
So this one's shouting.
Yeah. But the better approach might be Plume, which has a lot of these little pods, and you've got a better shot at being able to get a signal from one pod to another through open doorways and whatever, and hopefully not actually have to go through as many walls.
And again, Plume, like the others, if you have an Ethernet port in one of these rooms, you can connect it as well, and it will still be all part of the network. One downside to Plume is all of them have a single Ethernet port, so you can't, you can't use them as you would the Eero or the Orbeez. Right. In fact, all of these have multiple Ethernet ports, so you can use a switch off of them and have wired networking as well. Right. This really, you'd need your own switch and then connect this to your network via the switch and then have this be a, kind of a separate, you know, Wi-Fi only network. So I do like these because they're pretty, and plug them into the wall. And one of the things I got, I think, from your article, and I probably misunderstood this too, so you correct me if I'm wrong, is that the best way to do Wi-Fi is to whisper, in effect. That if you use 5G, which doesn't go through walls as well, and you create pools of Wi-Fi in the rooms you want, that you'll do better than trying to blast Wi-Fi throughout the whole house. Is that accurate?
That's absolutely accurate, but the devices have to actually set it up properly. Some are better at it than others. Plume is incredibly good at that because it tries to use all of the spectrum that it can with the individual pods on different channels. So if you're streaming, you know, 4K Netflix onto a TV in the living room and you're trying to download something with a tablet, you know, your kid or your wife is, you know, over in the bedroom, you're not going to be actually competing between those two devices because they're using different channels and they're not contending with one another for the Wi-Fi bandwidth.
That's one of the things all of these offer as well, is the automatic switching between 2 and 5 gigahertz, automatic switching between channels. They handle all of that transparently, so you don't have to. I have an old Asus router where you've got three, you know, bands, 2 5G and 1 2.4, right. And you have to pick the one you want to be on. That's not as good as being able to hand off and be intelligent about how the network's managed.
Correct. And, you know, that's another thing that differentiates these mesh products is how well they handle routing and band steering. And Plume gets nailed a lot in the press because it doesn't have the biggest raw throughput numbers. But it's incredibly good with handing off a device as you walk through the house from one pod to another. Most of these devices, you know, they're either pretty good at roaming or they just absolutely are terrible at it, you know, like old school routers.
Right.
I actually wrote a script on my test laptop when I test these devices that goes bing every time the laptop goes from one access point to another. And it kind of freaks the kids out when I'm walking through the house testing these things. And, you know, with Plume, like literally I'm walking from room to room and it's just going bing, 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 you know, going from one pod to the next without any intervention on my part at all.
Now, I use the Eero at my mom's house. What I've noticed is that different ones work better in different environments. Mm. Is that possible?
I'm thinking that if you're like one person in a concrete bunker, the Orbi would be the way to go.
Well, right? This is what I use at home, but I think I'm doing it for the wrong reason because I did a speed test on this, and it was twice as fast as anything else. The Plume was 120 megabits. This is 240 megabits.
But you were the only one testing it at the time.
Well,
exactly.
Multiple tests.
Is that why?
Yeah, exactly. Multiple devices are going to favor Plume setup much better than just
got it.
A single.
So if it's just you and you want the best throughput, this would be great. But if you have multiple people and you're roaming and who doesn't nowadays have a lot of stuff? I also notice I have a lot of other Wi-Fi things on my network that I didn't even know about. The Rokus, for instance, set up Wi-Fi Direct. They're Wi-Fi access points. Get out of my network, Roku. I'm not going to use Wi-Fi Direct. You can't disable it.
Yeah, no, you can't. Well, the remote controls for the Roku are also 2.4 gigahertz wireless.
So that's why I try to use 5 mostly, right?
Yeah, well, 5 is a lot better as long as you can connect to the 5 because you don't have the range and throughput. Well, that sounds like a bug, but it's really a feature because since you don't have the range and penetration, that means you don't have as many things competing for you on 5.
That's the key. So what you want to create is, if you think of it as light, little pools of light in each room.
Right.
And they're kind of discreet. They don't go beyond the room. You're not getting interfered with other people because their 5 gigahertz Wi-Fi of, you know, the neighbors isn't getting into your house either. So in some ways, it's counterintuitive, but the low range of the higher frequency is actually good.
Yes, especially if you live in an apartment complex. If you live in an apartment complex, you do not want to be using equipment with a ton of range and penetration.
Yeah, So have you tried? I mean, we're looking at the Amplify from Ubiquiti, the Google Wi-Fi, the Orbi, the Eero, and the Plume. You've tried these all?
I've spent ridiculous amounts of time testing all those and more. Yeah.
Are there noticeable differences between them?
Absolutely. Very big differences. Like I said, one of the things that people really notice, and that's one thing you have to look at, is are we talking about a difference when I'm sitting here with my laptop camped out next to an access point running speed tests trying to get a big number to talk to my friends about? Or are you talking about differences actually living with and using the equipment?
Well, that's what I want. I want like a little cheat sheet. So I have like Bunker for Zombie Apocalypse, the Orbi.
That's the
I
Orbi.
Have the House with Lots of Cats. We have the Plume.
The Plume.
What would be the use cases for the...
In my experience, the Google Wi-Fi is the least of good of all of these. I was just not happy with the Google Wi-Fi that
because...
How about you, Jim?
I would put an Amplify HT at the bottom of the crop that you've got there on the table.
Amplify's you'd think it'd be the best. It's from the company that's been doing this longer than anybody else.
You would think so. I love Ubiquiti's UAP access points, but I feel like they missed pretty badly with Amplify.
Oh, that's too bad. There's $350 down the tube.
Well, you know, it's still going to be a big improvement over whatever crap router you got lying
actually,
around the house.
That's a really good point.
With it,
I actually have a good.
Better than nothing.
I have a good Asus, AC. Whatever it is, 5200 router that I really like that served me well for a while, but none of them, I mean, all of these are better than that, which is weird because, you know, I mean, that was a high-end device.
What's the ARM for on this? What's the use of the small...
You can. Did you break it?
You broke
it? Yeah, you can pull it apart.
Never going to have me back. I'm sorry.
You broke it. No, it's
It comes
pull
off.
It comes
it does
off.
Pull.
Yeah,
okay.
Just pull it.
It's just a
it's
magnet.
Right off. It's magnetic. It's kind of fun to play with.
Oh, that scared the life out of me. I was like, I'm just going to put it
that's
back.
A
like,
tune-up,
I didn't touch
that's
it.
An aimable antenna. Is that just a gimmick?
Well, you know, usually the antennas are a complete lie. You know, you get these routers that are just bristling with antennas.
So my Asus has 6 antennas. It looks like an upside-down spider.
The AC is a lie and the antenna's a lie.
Yeah, they're all you can wiggle them around and they really are antennas, but they're omnidirectional. There's almost no difference in anything you can do.
I feel like such a sucker.
Now here's the thing.
Cool.
The Amplify, those mesh points actually are directional. Now the question is that a feature or is it a bug? Because the most signal comes out of the front of that little mesh point, not the back or the tops or the side.
So you aim it,
yes, you are blasting out more signal that way. But you have no way of marking where your perfect, awesome orientation that you theoretically figured out was. So, you know, what happens when your kid or your dog or your roommate or whatever knocks it and changes it? You know, how are you going to get that back?
So you tried them all.
Mm-hmm.
And it sounds like the ones you're using at home are the Plume. And is this your general recommendation?
Right now, I'm using Ubiquiti access points at home with wired backhaul. I'm probably going to start using Plume for real because my editor's the wire cutter would like me to dog food it.
Really? Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, we want to do we like to do long-term testing, and I'll be honest with you, my editor at the wire cutter has been kind of dubious about me singing the praises of Plume because everybody, you know, says, "Oh, well the throughput's so low," and I keep saying that's not really what this is about.
That's what I noticed. So, it seemed like it was slower, but because it's better for multiple devices and it's spread out.
Yeah.
I got one per room, which is what their recommendation is. They don't get outside the room that you're in, pretty much. How do they? Well, what's the backhaul though? If they, I mean, how do they talk to one another?
They're dual band devices, AC1200. They each have a 2.4 gigahertz radio and a 5 gigahertz radio.
Yeah.
And if you find the little topo graph on there in the article, it actually shows you what the backhaul looks like.
It, on their app, it does too. I don't really understand what it is. It looks like one of those weird multicellular organisms about to separate.
It decides whether it wants to use 2.4 or 5 for the backhaul on each individual pod talking to the other pods.
Okay.
That's the app view right there. The bigger view lower down in the article was from their actual NOC, and it's a little bit better because you can actually see what channels it's using.
So the wavy line is the backhaul or the direct?
No, the squiggly line shows that that's a 2.4 gigahertz connection, and the straight ones are 5 gigahertz.
Got it.
So if you look, you'll see like Jim's office is connected on 153 to the den, which is connected on channel 11.
Oh, that's
which
interesting.
Is 2.4.
So they choose not only the frequency, they choose the channel as well to make it.
They
work
choose the
best.
Frequency. They choose the topology. You know which pods connect to which. You don't manage any of that. It does it all for you.
How about firmware updates? Do you think they're pretty good in terms of keeping these up to date and improving the quality as time goes by?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. They spend a lot of time on that, and they actually have three different pools. They have basically two different kinds of beta pool that mostly people who work for Plume might be in, and then they've got a production, and they'll test out optimizer rules on the, basically call it the alpha and the beta before they decide if they like it and they push it out to production. So they do like much more aggressive things to their own devices that might have consequences. Test them out there, and then once they know it all works, they push it out to their customers.
Well, I really appreciate this. Again, thank you for writing an article that, at least to my limited ability, explains why Wi-Fi is so bad. That's on Ars Technica. Also, direct reviews, and I take it we're going to look for your Wirecutter review of the Plume. Will it be the Wirecutter's recommendation?
Well, you know, the Wirecutter's Mesh Guide is the first version of it is already out. It's a few months old now. The update is going to push probably next week, maybe the week after, and I don't think I'm allowed to tell you yet.
Oh, man.
But it's going to be the number one.
You have to wait. Right.
I will tell you, you know, the top two, obviously, you've been talking to me. You know the two that I like are Orbi and Plume.
Yep. Well, thank you, Jim, for writing such a great article and for coming on and giving us a little more clarity onto why Wi-Fi is so bad. And some hope that it can be better with, the right Wi-Fi router. And those mesh routers are better.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Thanks, Leo.
Thank you, Jim. Take care. What are you going to get for your house? See, you got a real problem because you've got two floors of virtual reality. You've got your holodeck upstairs and then your satellite holodeck downstairs. So you're really challenging.
Yeah, we might have to do both. Switch between them depending on what we're doing.
For a while, I have two different internet service providers in the house. Don't ask me why. It's a long story. But I, for a while, I was running two networks in the house. And I thought, you know what? I'm probably interfering with myself.
Right.
So I turn off the Wi-Fi on one of them unless I need it. And very interesting. I've been very happy with the Orbi. As I said, I set up my mom with Eero. It's been great. It's been a huge improvement for her. And I'm going to make sure Megan gets the Amplify HD. She's going to. Don't tell her it's the one he didn't like. My daughter has the Google Wi-Fi.
And that's the one you didn't like either.
She
might be watching.
But she's in a one-bedroom, a tiny apartment.
So then that's fine.
She doesn't. She's got two access points in her apartment. I think she's probably
She's
fine.
Okay.
Yeah.
She's okay.
Yeah. All right. Coming up in just a little bit, we're going to take a look at a camera that no one could afford, but everyone will want. Fujifilm's latest medium format camera and a very affordable and very sexy new computer. Is it okay to call a computer sexy?
I think so. Some computers are.
This is sleek. Where do you see this? It's attractive.
Oh, there we go.
Yeah, I want to marry it.
Keep my husband away from that computer.
Yeah, yeah. Anthony, as soon as he sees this, Anthony's going to want it. I can tell you. That's all coming up. But right now, a word about your first robot. You guys don't have a robot yet.
I want a robot.
You're going to get Curry.
I really want a robot.
You will love Curry. Your kids will love Curry. Curry is about knee high. And it's funny, when they designed Curry, these guys at Mayfield Robotics are some of the best roboticists in the country. We went down and visited Curry. She's so cute.
Oh, God.
They say there's things Curry does and then things Curry doesn't do intentionally. They don't want Curry to be intimidating. So she doesn't have a voice. She doesn't speak. She bleeps and bloops at you in a way that you completely understand. She blinks at you. She has full gestural capabilities. So you really start to personify this robot. It really has a person in your house. First thing you do when you get Curry home, she maps out your whole house electronically. She's got all kinds of sensors in there. She's sleeping.
Goodness, she's so cute. I want her.
And then you can say, okay, Curry, and walk her through the house and say, that's the kitchen. That's the living room. So once you name it, you can say, Curry, go in the living room and see if the dog is on the couch. And she has a camera, really nice high-definition camera. She'll send you stills or video to your phone, to the Curry app on your phone. She will also investigate if there's a loud noise. She'll go out and check it out automatically. She'll go
instead
say, what's going on? Yeah, instead of you. She's got two very good speakers in the base. So she will play music. You can ask her to play music or podcasts. In fact, you can say to Curry, wake me up at 7 a.m., play my favorite podcast, the new Screensavers. And then as I go get ready for work to brush my teeth and make my breakfast and get dressed, follow me around playing my show. Kids love her. She'll read bedtime stories to the kids. They really, this is your kids will, I'm telling you, when they're grown, they'll say, I remember when we got our first robot back in 2017. Well, I love Curry. Whatever happened to Curry? She's in the basement. No, you're going to want to have Curry. With all the other bots. You're going to love Curry. This is an awesome robot.
So she doesn't bring you your coffee as of yet.
No, she's not like people say, could she vacuum? No. She's like a little personal friend. She adds a presence, but she does. By the way, Curry's not available till later this year. They're still working on adding new features. For instance, they demoed for me what they call the conversational mode, where Curry will join a conversation and look to each person as they're talking and blink and nod. And I mean, she's doing it. She really is kind of part of your family. You can find out more at the website, HeyKurri.com, HeyKurri.com. And if you want, you can put down a refundable $100 to get in line to get Curry when she comes out. She will be $6.99, so that's $100 now and $5.99 at time of shipment, excluding taxes and shipping, of course. I think that I immediately got in line because I want to have one. Actually, I'm going to have two.
You're going to have two.
I want one here and one at home.
Oh, that sounds great.
A real live robot pal's waiting for you. HeyKurri.com. All right. Anthony, hide your eyes.
I want one.
Robert Ballasaire is here with a look at, well, you're going to see how cute this computer is, the HP Envy 34. Take a look.
When Microsoft released their new Surface Studio, they didn't just prove that Microsoft could still build cutting-edge products that everybody wanted. They also reinvigorated the all-in-one market. And HP is one of the companies that's coming in to show their new style. This is the HP Envy Curved All-in-One. They didn't want to make the highest performance super screaming desktop gaming platform. They wanted to make a long-lived appliance. And I actually like this because this is a company recognizing that these types of computers, these desktops, are going to be in our hands much longer than our laptops or our mobile devices. So they've built it with style. They've built it with function. They've built it not with the best specs, but with the longest-lived specs. And I like that. Now, of course, we need to start by talking about this screen. It is a 34-inch, 21:9 aspect ratio monitor, a 1900-millimeter radius for the curve. It's ultra-wide quad display, that's ultra WQHD, at 3440x1440. It is a Technicolor certification, which means it's going to give you accurate color reproduction if you're a video or photo editor. It's also got an IPS screen, that's a 178-degree viewing angle, a 10.5-millimeter bezel on the top and the sides, a 14-millimeter bezel at the bottom. It's not quite bezel-less, but it's got such a narrow bezel that it does kind of make the image float, which is a nice design cue. They've included a 7th-gen i5-7400T 35-watt CPU, or you could have it with an i7-7765-watt processor. They've got hybrid and dual storage options based on what exactly you need. This one comes with a 256-gigabyte NVMe PCIe-connected SSD for maximum performance, and a 1 or 2 terabyte hard drive. It also has up to 16 gigabytes of system memory and 2 SODIMM slots, so it is upgradable, as well as a GTX 950M with 4 gigabytes of G5 memory, or a Radeon RX 640 with 4 gigabytes of memory. They've included this Bang & Olufsen speaker bar, which comes from their partnership with B&O, and I have to say, it is by far the best-sounding all-in-one I have ever had in my lab. This thing is fantastic. Really deep lows, really clear highs, and they've included a little touch control just for that little extra something special. Speaking of something extra special, if you have a device, a phone or a tablet that does wireless charging, they've included a Qi charger in the base right here so that you can get a top off while you're using your all-in-one to watch Netflix or Amazon, your next series, whatever it might be. The geek cues are also fantastic. They understand that some of us want something this beautiful, but we also want expandability. That's why they've included four USB 3.0 ports, gigabit Ethernet, HDMI out, as well as USB-C Thunderbolt, and this is the big one for me, HDMI in. That means I can use this beautiful 34-inch monitor as a monitor for other devices. I can hook this up to my Xbox, to my PlayStation, to my Nintendo Switch, to my computer, and have a beautiful, gorgeous, wonderfully made, again, high-definition screen for whatever I want to use it with. Now, there are a few drawbacks, some things that I think they need to fix in the next version. The first thing has to be the keyboard. It's nice. It looks good. It's stylish, but doesn't feel really good. There's not enough throw. It's a little too flexible. I think they put a little bit too much time into the style and not enough time into how it actually feels under my fingers. Also, that mouse definitely needs to go. But the big thing has to be the fact that I have not yet found a way to fix the aspect ratio. You are stuck at 21:9, and it will stretch the image the entire way. So, for example, when I was playing Breath of the Wild, it didn't have any black bars. It stretched all the way to the edges. Now, it was still playable. It still looked good, but I'd like the option to put the black bars so that it looks the way the creators intended it to look. Hopefully, that can be fixed with software, and that will be changed in a future version of the Envy. Still, if you're looking for a very stylish all-in-one, something that has everything you would expect from a desktop at a price that's about half of what you could get from Microsoft, then HP has a winner in their Envy all-in-one with the curved screen. If you want to see a full review of this, you can find me on KnowHow at twit.tv/KH. We're going to be doing a full breakdown of the HP Envy in the near future. Until then, I'm Father Robert Ballasaire for Twit TV.
This is really, I mean, isn't that gorgeous?
It's beautiful.
It's almost as beautiful as you. This is really,
I'm worried for
really
my husband
stunning.
To...
Yeah, don't let Anthony see this because...
Go ahead. Oh, he's really excited.
Go ahead, just take it. Go ahead. I know what you want.
Ah, jeez. There we go. You've just...
Stole it! You know what's interesting about HP is that for a long time, I didn't recommend... I said, don't buy an HP no matter what you do because they were kind of junky and they had a lot of crapware on them and stuff. But when they split off from the enterprise, you know, they made two divisions, the PC division, they started making really nice. My favorite laptop is the HP Spectre 13T. I love it. And that is just gorgeous. And
that is beautiful.
It's about $400 less than the Surface Studio and more hardware. I mean, better hardware. You got 12 gigs of memory and an i5 and an SSD. And I just really, wow, very impressed. All right. Enough. I hope he comes back with that.
I don't know.
Do we have to return that to HP?
I might be stranded here now, Leo.
We'll make a trade. We keep Georgia. You can have the... How about that? We keep Georgia. You can have the Envy. No, he's not going for it. Dan Brecaglia is on the line from DP. Yeah, maybe. Let me think about it.
That's not too bad.
He's so... That's your husband?
That's
so
my
cute.
Husband.
So
Anthony.
Cute. Yeah. Dan Brecaglia is on the line from DP. Whoop. Yep. From DP Review, he's joining us via Skype to show off a new camera from Fujifilm. Hey, Dan, good to talk to you. Oh, look at
Hey, how's it going? Nice to talk to you guys.
So what's interesting to me about this is it's a medium format camera, but it's mirrorless.
That's correct, yeah. So it's interesting. If you look at the camera itself, it kind of looks like a traditional
DSLR.
35 millimeter yeah. SLR. But this actually, give me a second here, slides on off, and you can see... Actually, I'll take this off as well.
When you're talking digital, oh, look at the size of that sensor. So when you're talking medium format digital, what does that mean?
So, you know, that's a great question. People think medium format and they think significantly larger than full frame. When in fact, this latest crop of medium format digital cameras is not quite as big as traditional medium format film. It's about 1.7 times the size of full frame.
Wow.
And about
okay.
four times the size of APS-C.
Well, one thing I noticed right away is it's not square. I mean, film medium format, isn't that a square aspect ratio typically?
It typically can be. It can be 6x7. I actually have, this is a 6x4 or 5 old Fujifilm medium format camera.
Okay.
You can kind of see the heritage there a little
yeah,
bit.
Yeah, no kidding. So this looked like a maybe a 4.3. It looked like a or maybe even a wider angle sensor.
No, that's correct. It's 4.3.
Okay.
So yeah, it's like a micro four thirds
Interesting.
Size.
Interesting.
Yeah.
What's the, how many pixels? I mean, what's the resolution on this thing?
So it's a 51.4 megapixel sensor.
Holy cow.
Yep, there it is. And that's actually, it's interesting. It's exactly the same sensor size and pixel count as two other cameras currently on the market. The Pentax 645Z, which actually came out 3 years ago.
Right.
And also the Hasselblad X1D.
And that X1D is the one that Trey Ratcliffe was singing the praises of when he was here a couple of months ago. And Trey's using. Now, how does this compare to the Hasselblad?
So they're kind of similar. I think with Fujifilm, they have a little bit more experience in making a camera like this, a consumer. Because this is, you know, it's a professional camera, but it has some sort of consumer appeal. I haven't actually used the Hasselblad just yet. We got it in our office yesterday, and one of my DP review coworkers ran off with it, which I don't blame them.
Yeah. Yep.
But you know, they're similar in the sense that they're both mirrorless, and that's they're the only two mirrorless digital medium format cameras currently on the market.
What does mirrorless really mean?
So mirrorless basically refers to in a traditional SLR, you have the light will come through the lens and it will bounce off a series of mirrors up through the viewfinder. With a mirrorless camera, you eliminate the mirror and the viewfinder is actually electronic. So it's reading in real time off of the sensor. And so you're seeing things like exposure adjustments in real time as opposed to looking through an optical viewfinder where you're not going to see that kind of reflection.
It's kind of pros and cons. I mean, through the lens is nice because you're seeing exactly what the lens is seeing.
Exactly.
And typically the video taps on mirrorless are lower resolution. Right. You know, there might be some latency as you move around, things like that. But on the other hand, you get all, as you say, you get a picture of what the picture is going to look like, and you get also any additional information that the manufacturer decides to put up there. So it takes some getting used to. Do they have a pretty good video viewfinder?
So the resolution of the viewfinder is pretty good. I think it's 3.69 million dots. The problem is, and one issue I ran into, so I was shooting with this in Tokyo a couple weeks ago.
Look at these shots. These are your shots? These are great.
These are my shots. This is actually through glass from the Tokyo Skytree.
Wow.
But one of the problems I ran into is because the viewfinder, despite its high resolution, is reading from the sensor. When you initiate autofocus on this camera, it has to basically use that data to both achieve focus and provide you with this electronic viewfinder display. And so you get some shimmering, you get some moiré, you get some distracting elements that can hinder your ability maybe to compose an image. So that's just one thing to take into account.
Look at this.
Wow.
Dan, what a beautiful image.
Thank you very much.
Photoshop,
this one,
that's gorgeous.
It's actually cropped in two times. And again, that's an advantage of having such a high resolution camera is you can easily crop in, you know, two, three times and still have a really nice image that, I mean, you could zoom that in even further and it'll hold up and it'll look okay.
One thing, and one of the reasons I haven't bought a, besides the fact that it's $6,500.
Right.
And by the way, that doesn't include a lens, right? That's just the body.
That is just the body. That's correct.
But one of the things that stopped me, as much as I'd love to have a medium format camera, is your technique has to be perfect because there's so much detail on here. You're seeing so much more of the image. You can't get away with the things. Even a full frame sensor, you can get away with. You've got to have perfect technique to use these.
So instead of me being like, you know, it's not going to make me a great photographer.
I wish it would because I'd buy it if it did.
I actually have to be a better photographer to use a really expensive camera.
It might be you don't get as good images on a medium format camera that you would get on a point and shoot, right, Dan?
Yes, exactly. And obviously, you know, no camera, no amount of money is going to make you a better photographer.
Any more than a better typewriter would make you a Hemingway,
Well, you can
right?
hire someone then.
Yeah, hire Dan. He's good. but I've been told that if things like motion blur are just much more visible when you're using a medium format camera.
That's absolutely correct. And this camera, in a lot of ways, is really geared towards studio photographers, landscape shooters, people probably using a tripod in a lot of cases.
Well, I'm wondering, did you use a tripod for these shots?
I didn't. And before we post our review, I'm going to try to get out there and shoot some landscapes. But it's definitely a camera that's going to be well suited for their, you know, we had to get some quick portraits.
It even makes you look good.
Exactly. You know, there's no image stabilization in this particular lens, but a couple of the lenses, this other one here, this does have built-in optical image stabilization. And so that will assist you a little bit in getting a steadier shot.
Well, and that's another issue. What's the mount? Can I use any of my lenses, or do I have to get new lenses for the Fuji?
Yeah, so that's another great question. Right now, there are only three lenses on the market for the system because it's a brand new system. It's called a GF mount. And right now, so this is the first one that we got. It's a 63 mil, which is about a full frame equivalent to a 50 millimeter lens. And this other one, this 120 is about a 95 equivalent, so a portrait lens. And then they're currently shipping a 25 to 51 millimeter equivalent zoom. But the one thing you'll notice about all these lenses is they're not that fast. This is an f2.8. This is an f4. Wow. And the zoom that's coming is an f4.
Wow.
So when you compare it to something like high resolution full frame, where there's lots faster glass, f1.4s, the advantage of having the larger sensor in some ways is actually lost.
That night shot in Tokyo then,
yeah.
How did you shoot that? It's dark.
It is dark. So the sensor, the high ISO performance is just unbelievable.
Ah. I think that
photo, let's see, that was shot at...
I do see some grains if I look at it really closely, so...
Yeah, there's a little bit of grain.
You're
it's 12,800.
12,000, wow. But you get you can shoot higher ISOs with less grain because of the sensor?
That's correct, absolutely. Because of the sensor, because of the size, and just the way in which light is coming into the lens, there's so much more room, there's so much more light gathering ability, you can just get better low light images, which is really nice. That was at 1/90th of a second. So I was kind of pushing it in terms of holding it steady.
You must have very steady hands. Wow.
That's impressive.
Yeah. So this is almost a specialty camera, right? This is not something you're going to say, I'm going to replace my Canon 5D with it.
Yeah, I would say it's really a specialty camera. If high-resolution photography is really important to you, this is a really good choice. However, again, the fact that there are only three lenses, it's something probably worth waiting a generation or two out when it's built out a bit more in terms of the lens family and the camera system.
That's the sad thing, is that once you get a set of lens, they're all proprietary and you can't really...
You're stuck.
You know, it stops
yeah.
people from yeah. upgrading if you have a camera and you'd like to get another one.
They did actually, it's interesting, just this week, somebody announced an adapter for Canon lenses onto this.
Oh, interesting.
So they will be made. There will be third-party support. You won't have full autofocus or things like that.
Just remember that you have to take the Canon lens focal length and divide it by 1.7 to figure out what it's going to be on that focus.
Exactly. Field. Yep.
So you have to do math.
You have to do the math. There is math involved. How about Fuji's software? Does it do a good job? I mean, Fuji's kind of famous for the quality of the images you can get.
Yeah, Fuji has some of the nicest color science of any manufacturer out there. And it's something we at Deep Review are constantly singing the praises. And so just, you know, prior to this camera, the largest sensor that Fujifilm was using was APS-C, which is, again, a quarter the size of this.
So their GSs are not GHs are not full frame. They're APS-C.
Yeah. So their whole line of X series cameras is all APS-C. Yeah.
Okay. All right.
So the XT2 and the X Pro 2 and all those.
All right.
So it's cool to be able to get that color science in such a large, high resolution image.
When I look at these images, Dan, that you've taken, the test images, but also these beautiful images of Tokyo, I am so blown away. But
I don't think that if I was using the same camera, though, it would look like that.
Yeah, you and I aren't going to get those pictures. That's for sure.
I took a couple of comparisons on my iPhone just to see.
Oh, did you?
Yeah.
Is it close?
It's not too close.
iPhone
is
not bad, though. I mean, it's not bad. You got it in your pocket. It's the camera you have.
It's the camera I have with me.
Yeah. Exactly.
Well, it's so great to talk to you, Dan. First time from Dan on our DP review segments, but I hope we'll see more of you, Dan Brecaglia.
Absolutely.
Obviously, you're a professional photographer, I would guess.
Yeah, my background's in photojournalism.
Yeah, yeah.
But I've been writing about cameras for about 6.5 years now.
Nice. Well, I look forward to seeing your review. When will that be out?
That should be out either sometime next week or the week after, okay, depending on some scheduling.
Great. Dan Brancaccia, dpreview.com, a great site, the must-visit site before you buy a camera. Don't buy a camera without going to DP Review. And it's also fun sometimes to browse DP Review for products like this that you just drool over and wish you could get.
Just skip over the comments section.
What do the comments say? Are they mean?
Oh, man, we get some pretty vocal commenters.
I can't take a better picture of my Instamatic. Exactly. A piece of junk.
People care a lot about their cameras.
They do. That's good
it's
to
like
be
their children.
Yeah. It's good to be in an area where people are passionate. That's what
true.
I
That's
say.
A good way to yeah. say it.
Thank you, Dan.
Thank you.
I appreciate it. Coming up, a call for help. You're going to help me upgrade somebody's MacBook Pro. And Nate has a review of, I think, probably the best set-top box you can buy today. No, it's not an Apple TV. We'll talk about that in just a second. But first, I wish you had this in Canada. I bet you wish you had Blue Apron
I
in
do.
Canada. Blue Apron is amazing. It delivers to 99% of the continental United States. That means no Hawaii either. I'm sorry. But, man, if you can get Blue Apron, you should. Blue Apron brings the freshest ingredients, everything you need to make an amazing meal, plus the recipe card right to your door, so you don't have to do any meal planning or grocery shopping. You just go to the Blue Apron site, pick the meal you want to make. They have plans for couples, and they have plans for families. And the family plans, of course, have more kid-friendly ingredients. But I tell you what, Blue Apron families cook together two times more often because it's there. You got everything you need. You could do the cooking. It's great for the kids. They can help. They can be part of it. The house fills with these amazing aromas. Blue Apron does some really interesting recipes with lots of very delicious aromatic ingredients. And you start smelling it, and the kids get excited. And you're making an amazing meal, and you're turning them on to the idea of a sustainable food system, high-quality food, homemade, so much better than eating out, and it's mm-hmm. so great. Now, it's not a subscription. You're not gonna you only get it when you want it. You pick the items from the menu that you want, so your kids can be part of that too. And they when they're part of the cooking and they put it on the plate and it looks so great, they really get a wonderful experience. I am a huge Blue Apron fan. In fact, we always get excited when there's a Blue Apron on our doorstep because we know we're going to get something amazing for dinner tonight.
And now, it's all going to be there. You don't have to worry that their one ingredient is missing.
Precisely. And by the way, no more than you need either. If you need two carrots, it's two carrots, not a whole bunch. So there's no waste.
So nice.
I really like that because we have a leftover problem.
Yeah.
Our fridge is full of stuff that we didn't finish. Actually, this, though, if you're one person, is good, too, because then you get a meal the next day, too. And by the way, that's the kind of leftovers you might really enjoy. Salmon piccata with orzo and broccoli. Pork chops and miso butter with bok choy and marinated apple. I have become a bok choy pro because of all the different kinds of bok choy and the different ways they have of preparing it. I've discovered new sauces. There's a Japanese rice sauce called mirin. Have you ever had that?
Yes.
Oh, it's amazing.
So
that with bok choy, your mouth will just go, yeah! Vegetable chili and baked sweet potatoes with crispy tortilla strips. Spicy shrimp coconut curry with cabbage and rice. And the other thing I like, I always assumed, oh, this is going to cost more than grocery store. I'm going to pay a premium. But that's okay because it's cool. And no, it's not. The grocery store is 60% more expensive because Blue Apron has less overhead. They don't have the brick-and-mortar store. They don't have the rent. They don't have all the clerks. They don't have all the personnel. So they can actually give you these amazing meals for less, around $10 per person. You cooked it. You're learning. You're using new ingredients. I love it. Check out this week's menu and get your first three meals free with your first purchase and free shipping by going to blueapron.com/NSS. You will love how good it feels and tastes to create incredible home-cooked meals with Blue Apron. blueapron.com/NSS.
Now, do they have, like, a skills level so that if you're, like, you know, not that great of a chef?
It looks like everything looks like, oh, I don't know if I can make that. And then almost in every case, I have yet to find something. They walk you through it. They've got videos. It is dead simple no matter what.
Wow. That's great.
So, and what it does is it raises your level of ability and your confidence, too, because it isn't hard. You know, if you could follow a recipe, there's nothing you can't cook. And they give you everything you need. I have to say, and I love it because I get in a rut. I'm sure you do, too, where you just know what your family's going to like.
Yes.
And you make the same,
yes,
you know, it's Taco Tuesday again, right? And so this gets you out of your rut.
Yeah, it gets you out of your comfort zone.
And you try something. Yeah, you try an ingredient you've not tried before, and from now on, you know, I bought some mirin. I bought, there was a barbecue sauce, nakiyoki or something that I can't remember the name, but it's so good. And now I'm making that with bok choy. Oh, and a little ginger and you grab. Anyway, enough. I'm sorry. I'm making you hungry. Blue Apron. Next, actually last week, remember we did the No Man's Sky and I brought in my NVIDIA Shield, which is a bigger device. But Nathan has the new one. This is the new NVIDIA Shield 2.0 that just came out. It's an Android TV device, and he's got a review for us. Nate?
The new second-generation NVIDIA Shield is one of the most powerful streaming set-top boxes you can plug into your TV. It handles 4K and HDR video streaming, and you can play most Android video games on it, too. But unlike any other streaming set-top box out there, this plays full-fledged AAA video games, the exact sort that you'd find on a console or a gaming PC. The $200 Shield, which isn't much bigger than my wallet, is powered by NVIDIA's Tegra X1 chip and 3 GB of RAM. There's also just 16 GB of local storage and no micro SD card slot. But high-end gaming largely won't rely on the Shield's processing power or storage space. Instead, the work is done in the cloud, thanks to NVIDIA's GeForce Now streaming service, which comes at a cost of $8 a month. With the cloud handling most of the heavy lifting, I don't see much reason to opt for the Shield Pro, which is $300 and basically the same as the base model, but you get 500 gigabytes of storage. In my testing, I found that streaming games on GeForce Now worked remarkably well as long as you have a home internet connection of about 100 megabits per second.
Oh, God.
I rarely experienced stuttering or lag during gameplay, and games were in sync with my button and trigger pressing on the Shield's gamepad. Let's talk about the controller. I find its polygonal looks to be ugly, but it's surprisingly comfortable to hold on to, and it has a good weight to it. The D-pad is stiff, making the smooth joysticks a better option in every case. One gripe, some games think you're playing on a PC and give you directions for keyboard-based gameplay rather than a gamepad. Another frustration, while streaming games using the GeForce Now service is technically impressive, you'll rarely find a newly released game here. Most of what's available to play for free is old, like 2009's Borderlands or the 2013 reboot of Tomb Raider. Those games are great, but they're outdated. The newest game I spotted was No Man's Sky, which came out in 2016. When you do see newer games like that, they sell for about $60, which is the same price as on a console or PC. NVIDIA wants to turn the Shield into a smart home hub, too. Later this year, NVIDIA will sell a small microphone called the Spot, which will connect to the Shield and use the Google Assistant to let you control internet-connected lights like the Philips Hue, Wi-Fi streaming speakers, and other smart home devices like everything Nest makes. I wasn't able to test out the smart home features because they're not available yet, but voice search does have some cool tricks. When do the Lakers play next?
Los Angeles Lakers are facing Minnesota Timberwolves tomorrow at 7:30 p.m.
What's the weather like today?
Today's forecast for Petaluma is 60 degrees and partly cloudy.
If you have a gaming PC that has a newer NVIDIA graphics card, you can stream games from your PC to your TV using the Shield, which makes this device a no-brainer for NVIDIA fans. If you're a diehard Android fan, there's no Android TV box that's more powerful than this. And when it comes to gaming, you'll definitely get more bang for your buck here than with an Apple TV, which also sells for $200. But for people who both want to play the latest video games and watch shows on Amazon, Netflix, or Hulu, spending the extra $50 to $100 on a PlayStation or Xbox, both of which can play back HDR video and video games, is worth the extra cash. I'm Nathan Olivatis-Giles, and you can find me on the new Screensavers on Saturdays and other shows on the TWiT Network.
He's our newest hire.
Awesome.
That's Giles. Yeah, we love him.
Awesome.
I should mention one thing. $60 for No Man's Sky, but you also get a credit for the Steam version, so you can play it on your PC, too. So it's like you're buying it for your PC, and then you get it on GeForce Now as well.
It's almost free, is what you're saying.
It's practically free, plus $60. I really, I love this. This is amazing, this little, look how small that
it's
is.
It's small.
Yeah.
Small and light.
Doesn't do iTunes. And if, you know, I know that you you probably have a lot of iTunes movies. And
yeah,
you got those iTunes cards as part of the Turkish crime
right.
family.
Right, yeah.
So,
Stock up now.
So, you want to do a call for help?
Yeah, let's
You're
do
You're good
it.
At this. I bet
let's
you
do
are.
It.
Let's get a call for help! We're going to Germany. Martin's on the line from Groß Gerau. Hi, Martin. How are you?
I'm good, thank you.
Is this the Martin I talk to in the chat room all the time?
No.
No. Never mind. So, Martin, what can we do for you? Well, by the way, welcome. Are you a skater? Looks like you are.
I do run a small skateboard company.
Nice. Are these your designs on the decks back here?
No, those are collector's items.
Those are really sweet, yeah. What's the name of your skateboard company?
It's called Dub Skateboards, D-U-B Skateboards.
Nice. I'll check it out. What can we do for you?
So I was watching your piece with Kyle Wiens from iFixit when he did the MacBook Pro teardown.
Yep.
And how everything's soldered in, glued in, you practically can't get to any part.
Yes,
and
unfortunately.
That's not cool.
Not cool at all.
No. Also for recycling, it's really bad.
Yep. Yeah,
really
I'm bad. With you on that.
So, yeah, I'm running a 2011 MacBook Pro. It's going strong, it's good, but at some point it'll break, and then I need to make a decision. And what I don't want is one of these new MacBook Pros.
I don't blame you.
I just don't like the idea.
Yeah.
So my thought is, right now, even though I don't need it right now, I'll get one of the latest models where I can still replace things.
That's a great idea.
I was trying to find out which one is the latest one where I can swap the hard drive, replace the battery, add RAM. And it was such a hard thing with all the models and versions to find out. So that's why I'm coming to you for some help.
Yeah. In fact, we did this with my 2011 MacBook Pro. No, it was 2012 MacBook Pro. That's not what this is. I didn't want to take that one apart. But I know 2012, at least, you can open up. This is a very similar way. It has 10 Torx screws. So that's that special screwdriver. You'll go to iFixit or somewhere that sells Torx head screwdrivers. And then it's a simple thing to just take out those screws, take off the back, and man, I wish Apple would do this with the current crop. You see, they even have a tab, so you could pull the battery out. You could... I don't think that's important. You can pull out the... I'm sure you don't need that. This is the... what is this? This is a... hard drive?
Yeah.
Really? Oh, I see what it is. It's got a... It's a... I see. If you slide the hard drive out of here... you could pull out the hard... Oh, I don't know. So, Martin, I take it you're not going to be like me. You're going to actually do this carefully.
Yeah.
One of the things I did is I took the CD-ROM out. In fact, I think this was on know-how. You could go back and look at an old know-how. Took the CD-ROM out. I went to Otherworld Computing, maxsales.com, and got a hard drive. Take the CD-ROM out, and it was a second hard drive that allowed me to double the capacity of the device. So at least in 2012, and I'm sure later, you can replace the DVD, you can replace the battery, you can replace the hard drive, or all three. And by the way, unlike the current crop of MacBook Pros, which have the, as you know, the RAM is soldered onto the motherboard, this also has a SODIMM slot, so you can remove the RAM and replace it with bigger RAM. And that's an easy fix for anybody to do, just like that. So I don't need that either. So this is... I'll put it all together after the show, right? Or Jerry
will.
Or
get someone else to, yeah.
Yeah. So, but actually, you asked a good question. What year? Here's what I would suggest you do. Before you do any of this, go to maxsales.com, Otherworld Computing, and look at their upgrades, like the Mercury Drive and stuff, and they will tell you what models they'll work with. So you can you look at the parts you're going to add first, and they'll tell you which laptops you can put it in. And I think that, what does it say, 2012, that's the one I upgraded, late 2013, that's probably the last one. Oh, there's a 2015, that's not so bad. So
yeah, it's all mixed. In some years...
I know.
Some parts are soldered on. And in other years, everything's soldered on.
Right. Yeah. So you see right there. Did you see? Show that again. You see right there it says the models Mac Pro 11,5, 12,1. Yep. That's what you're looking for. Because then you will know that you can do that upgrade to that model. And that's, as you say, they're mixed. So you can't just say, oh, I'm going to get any 2015 MacBook Pro.
Yeah,
you're
right.
Going to have
That's
to figure
problem.
Out. Yeah. So this is a great resource. And frankly, I buy all my upgrades from them. Do you know about Otherworld Computing? They've been doing Mac upgrades forever and ever. Their Mercury SSDs are a great deal. That's where I do all my upgrades from. So free plug. They're not an advertiser, but I think this is where you're going to go. You're going to look at the models and what you can do with those specific models. Figure out, in other words, what you want to do first. And then, go on eBay and get, or use Mac Store and find that model. That 2015, yeah, this is the one I upgraded. And I have to say, it makes a difference. Apple, you're obviously the Touch Bar. I don't care about the Touch Bar.
I don't care about the Touch Bar.
I hate that. I see you using the MacBook.
Like, yeah, no. I actually downgraded.
I got the MacBook Pro 15 with Touch Bar. Lisa got the 13. And I hate the Touch Bar so much. It's not useful. And I hit it by accident all the time that I downgraded to the Touch Barless. The last one that they sold in 2016, end of 2016. And it's fine for me. It only has two Type-C ports. It's not upgradable either, Martin.
Yeah, but yeah, after done, I'm just going to throw it
away.
That's so sad.
Isn't it?
It's gone.
Yeah. There's the teardown. And if you scroll down, you can see how everything is surface mounted. There's no upgrading at all. No upgrading at all. That's why I got a repairability score of 1. I don't think they give it a 0. I think that's the lowest you can get. In fact, the new MacBook, they didn't take the battery out because they said, we had so much trouble taking the battery out the last time, we're not even going to bother. It's so glued in there.
They can't do it. Don't try.
What is Apple thinking? And all this for a few millimeters in thickness, you know?
Well, because then you'll buy more computers.
But that's unconscionable because that's going to end up in the landfill, right? That's not where you want it to end up. There's too much valuable stuff in
there. You're right.
So there you go. 0. Did they give a 0 to the AirPods?
Yes.
They have given a 0.
Really? There we go.
So they do. They changed
same thing with the AirPods.
They changed the scale. They changed the scale. So that's my suggestion. MacSales.com. Pick the upgrades you want, and then pick the laptop based on the upgrade that you want. Does that make
sense? Okay, and then I'll put one in the closet for the next 10 years, and I'm fine.
You do what Steve Gibson does. You know, Steve Gibson. He liked the Palm.
I won't freeze anything. No,
yeah,
just
he
the
put
closet.
The Palm 7. He liked the Palm 7 so much 20 years ago or something. He put it in his freezer. He's got 10 of them in his freezer.
What? Why?
Well, if it's in the freezer, the battery doesn't degrade. I mean, you seal it so it doesn't get moisture in there. But I don't.
He really likes them a lot. I know people that buy shoes that, you know,
yeah,
two pairs
different.
Of the same
you
shoe.
Can,
you don't have to stick it in the freezer.
Yeah. No. So, Martin, that's my suggestion. I think that's a great thing to do.
But don't
put that's
in
pretty
freezer.
Good advice.
Strange.
I come from the other side. I look at the parts. Yeah.
Yeah, look at the parts.
Look at the parts.
And then
yeah.
you'll see. And they even tell you exactly what models that part will work with. So you can decide.
And then I'll go hit eBay.
Exactly. I'll hit eBay. Hey, it's great to talk to you, Martin. Thanks for listening. Am I saying that right? Gross Grau?
You need to put on your German general voice.
Grossgrau.
Gross
Grau.
That's pretty close. Gross Grau.
Because it's got that funny little beta instead of two S's. What do you call that character?
Schaffes S. It's like a sharp S.
Sharp S. Schaffes S. Yeah. All right. Yeah. Thanks, Martin. Great to talk to you.
All right. Bye.
And we'll check out dub boards. Look at those gate boards. Next week, Jason Howell will be here. He can do the Android questions. If you've got a question for him, here's how.
Need tech help? The new screensavers are here with answers. Email your tech questions to newscreensavers@twit.tv.
We have sent Megan Maroney out on a mission to help protect our privacy online, especially the Facebook. And we've had a number of tips from her. This week, she's going to show you how you can get your data back from Facebook, extract it all from Facebook. Megan, explain.
Welcome to part 4 of our bajillion part series on how to help protect your privacy and still use Facebook. Today's tip is how to download your entire Facebook account to your hard drive. That way you can keep it for your records or print it out and give it to people as holiday gifts. Now, I do not remember every photo I posted or every time I gave away personal details of myself or my family or my friends on Facebook, but if I download it, I'll have it all in one place. And if my tips have finally convinced me or you that using Facebook is not worth the privacy trade-off, and we've decided to delete our account, we will probably want to save all of our memories, and here's how we can do it. Note: Facebook is a bit cagey about what exactly is contained in this massive download. In their help center, they say the file contains, quote, a lot of the same information available to you in your account and activity log, including your timeline info, your posts that you've shared, messages, photos, and more. Notice it says a lot and not all. But Facebook also says the download contains additional information that you can't get just by logging into your account, like ads that you've clicked on, logged IP addresses, and more. Take a look at the more, and you might begin to question your Facebook use. Here's some of what that download will contain. Facial recognition data, which includes a unique number based on a comparison of the photos that you're tagged in. Now, that number is essentially your face print that Facebook says it uses to help others tag you in photos. Looking at this number is creepy at best, and I do not want Facebook to help others tag me in photos. I only want people to tag me in photos if they're able to recognize my face without the help of a computer. The download also lists your active sessions. So that's the date, the time, the device, the IP address, machine cookie, and browser information of every single time that you've logged into Facebook. So take a look at all your active sessions if you think someone might be secretly logging into your account, or if you just want to get a good idea of how often you log into this privacy-leeching, time-sucking machine. You probably could have written a great American novel in that time. And speaking of great American novels, your download also features logs of every last Messenger conversation you've had. Every last conversation. That is a serious trove of data. Remember to protect it after you've downloaded it if those conversations contain secret information. And if you want to take a real walk down memory lane, the data also includes a list of all those friends that you've deleted or blocked. The most bizarre item that showed up on my Facebook archive was at the very bottom of my friends list. It said friend peer group and listed mine as established adult life. Now, I don't exactly know what to make of that, although I'm sure it's used to advertise stuff to me. And clearly, I think I have been misrepresenting myself on Facebook because someone with an established adult life probably cooks a lot more than I do and also separates her whites from her darks when she's doing her laundry. Interested yet? To download your information, go to your settings and click download a copy of your Facebook data, then click download archive. You'll have to re-enter your password, which is a good thing. I wish there was real two-factor authentication enabled here. It does make you check your email associated with the account and confirm that you meant to request it, but you don't need to do that on another device. Walk through the wizard and then wait for your download to complete. The link will only work for a few days, so Facebook warns you to watch your email to make sure you don't miss it. When you get it, you'll have to enter your password again. That is my tip for this week. If you have suggestions or questions about Facebook privacy, email me at megan@twit.tv, and I will try to answer them. You can catch me every day of the week on Tech News Today with Jason Howell and once a week on iOS Today with Leo. That show is available to download on Monday, and don't forget to subscribe.
One, two, three, go! This was her idea. Don't blame me for this. $1 million. You like our Dr. Evil chairs?
I love them.
It's funny
the Dr.
that you
Evil
figured
chairs.
Out that these what these are is Dr. Evil chairs.
I love them.
We
They're
need
great.
To get
They're
we
riveted.
Need to get a little cat a little yeah. hairless cat to
just
pet.
Keep them away from the Wi-Fi.
Isn't that funny? I didn't know, but that makes sense that a cat would be bad for your Wi-Fi. I'll have to tell Lisa we only cats. Have 3 cats.
Oh, do you really?
Yeah, only 3. She says that's it. Hey, I want to give you a plug because these are all your videos. And I want to thank Sandra, your partner, for sending these along. Georgia is a family therapist. Sandra is as well, right?
Yes, she is.
And you specialize in anxiety. In fact, the domain is anxiety-videos.com. But you've branched out a little bit, too, because not only videos about dealing with anxiety, but also parenting, getting the sleep. I love this. You've always dreamt of. That is one sleep. But babies always sleep great.
They do if they unless they have colic. But yes,
right.
usually.
That's right. If they have colic, no fun. Is it because they have no cares or they haven't yet figured out the world sucks?
We actually start off sleeping really well.
Yeah.
And then because we might perseverate, overthink, worry.
Your mind doesn't stop, does
exactly.
it?
Exactly. And then we outlearn how to sleep. So we usually start off with good sleep habits. And
actually,
then,
that's appropriate because this one is how to stop your mind, your thoughts from running the show.
That's a really important one.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. And at parenting as well. These are all available at anxiety-videos.com. Nice DVDs. Thank you for doing that.
Oh, you're welcome.
And thank you and Anthony for making the trip. I hope he enjoys that new computer.
Yeah.
Jeez Louise.
He's with it right now.
All right, time for the mailbag. Roll her in here. You didn't know we actually have a, well, it's a mailbox, mailbag.
I love it.
It's fitted with those saw
That's
blades.
Just in case someone tries to steal
No one can steal our mail. And here they are. Oh, and look, Here's a picture. By the way, Tanya, is this Tanya's last day? No.
It's my last Saturday.
It's your last Saturday. Tanya is going to continue to work for us, but she's moving and apparently has quite a bit of gear. Is that a... is that a Casper mattress?
Oh,
I think it is.
That's great.
So Tanya is going to continue to book, but she'll be doing it from Colorado going forward. So if you get a call from Colorado, that's her. We're going to miss having you around, though, because Tanya is so much fun. And she's been one of our great producers and books most of our guests. You talk to her every time you appear on
our shows. I do.
I
love Tanya. I'm so excited that I got to meet her. So.
Yeah, I am too. We're going to miss you, Tanya. But they apparently had a big going away party last night for you.
Yeah, we partied just a little bit.
Yeah, I wasn't invited. So pick an email, any email. It's very important, though. Don't pick the wrong one. Okay, good. That's a therapist joke. Sit in a chair, any chair.
But I'm judging you on
every chair. Yeah, I'm judging you on every chair. Go ahead, you can start.
Okay, email one. My wife is an attorney and public activist. Actually, I had a similar issue to this. She's concerned about reentering the country and having to surrender her phone to the TSA.
Wow.
Which may be hacked or cloned. She logs out of the app. She's concerned about Facebook, Twitter, Skype, Google Photos, Google Keep, all the rest. Would they still be able to get her logins, passwords, and then access her accounts? What if she deleted the apps before re-entering the country and then re-downloaded them later? She has an iPhone 6S and uses the fingerprint reader. From Jimmy.
We get this question a lot now.
Yes.
It isn't the TSA, by the way. That's the security that does a security search before you get on an airplane. It's the Customs and Border Patrol.
Yes.
It's the customs control people. And you know, when you go into a country, you had to do that when you were entering the United States. You would give them your passport. You talk to them. In the case of people who are not American, did you get fingerprinted?
I did not get fingerprinted, no.
I guess because we have a relationship with Canada, we don't do that. But many other countries, they'll fingerprint you. You're in a database. Unfortunately, because of the post 9/11 climate, it's gotten worse and worse. And lately, the customs people have been asking people to unlock their devices. We've heard a number of cases of that. Generally speaking, you didn't have a problem, right? They didn't ask for anything.
I didn't have a problem, but because I'm a therapist and I have a lot of private information that comes in, it was a really big issue because I'm not just protecting my own privacy. I'm protecting the privacy of my clients.
So what did you do?
So what we decided to do is, like, really the one thing you don't want to do is lie, because that is a crime.
Never lie to them. Tell them the truth, absolutely. I don't have a password, I don't know my password, I forgot my password. Don't do that. That's asking for trouble.
Yes, so I made sure that I had my passcode on and my fingerprint reader as well. And anything that would be, like, work emails, I took them off of my phone so that they would not be there. And if they had asked... If I have other emails that I don't, I would have been honest and just said, well, because I'm a therapist, I have to make sure that I, am protecting the privacy of my clients, and I would have dealt with that. And the rest of it, I just left as is.
If you're a U.S. citizen entering the country, they still have the right to ask you. They do have the right to ask you to unlock your phone. You have the right to say no if you're a U.S. citizen.
Mm-hmm.
If you're not a U.S. citizen, you can get turned back at the border.
Yeah.
In fact,
I think
in many
cases,
you still
have the right to
say no. You could say no, but you would get turned back at the border.
Yeah.
If you are a U.S. citizen, they apparently, according to the Electronic Frontier Foundation, and they have a very good article on this at EFF.org, I recommend it to you. You have the right to say no, but you have the risk then, if you say no, of being detained for some hours.
Yes.
Eventually, they have to let you in. They can't not let you in if you're a U.S. citizen. But they can make it very uncomfortable. So most people will opt to give them the password. Now, here's the problem. If you unlock, and it could be a fingerprint, it could be a password, it could be both. If you unlock the phone for them, we've heard at least in one case, a NASA scientist from JPL, it wasn't even his phone, it was a JPL-owned phone. He gives them the phone, they take it in another room, and they come back some minutes later. We don't know what they've done to the phone. At the very least, it's likely they've taken everything off it. So you want to know if they have access to your Facebook. Well, they can't take your password off of it, but if they can access your phone, they probably can access your Facebook. They can do everything you could do if your phone were unlocked. They also may take everything off the phone for later analysis. And while I don't think they do this, it's important to understand that if anybody has physical access to your device, they can also put things on your device. So they could put, as for instance, if you read the latest WikiLeaks, the CIA had ways to get information from your phone before you encrypted with LastPass or WhatsApp or Signal. because they had spyware on your phone. So that exists. There is such a thing. They could conceivably put it on there. It might not be detectable. So if almost all experts say this, if they take your phone, it's theirs. Let them keep it. You don't want it back. You cannot effectively wipe it and protect yourself.
Yeah.
If I were you, what I would do, and I don't think this is illegal, is make a copy of the contents of your phone before you leave the country. And before you get off the airplane, wipe your phone, erase it, unlock it. It's fine. There's nothing on it. If they do, chances are they're not going to do anything, in which case you can restore your phone and you're back to go. If they do ask for your phone, you've just lost, you know.
Get a new phone.
Get a new phone. I hate to say that, but get a new phone. We're in very troubled times, and I worry. And it's a completely different matter if you're not a U.S. citizen. They have far more rights. It has always been the case legally that entering the country, you're not protected, whether citizen or not, you're not protected in the same way that you are once you're in country. So just remember that. The right to cross the border is a privilege, and they have the right to restrict that in some way. And, I don't know. I have some international travels coming up, one of which this year, I mentioned this on Mac Break Weekly, is to Cuba. And I think that anybody coming into Cuba from the United States probably is going to be subject to greater scrutiny. So what I'll probably do is bring a burner phone.
Right.
Yeah. A phone that I don't mind losing. This is the article, Digital Privacy at the U.S. Border, Protecting the Data on Your Devices in the Cloud. Highly recommend this. This is from EFF. EFF, very technically sophisticated and also legally sophisticated. So you can trust the legal and technical information you get from EFF.org. That's an excellent article. And I'm sorry we have to think about this, but we do.
It's important. It has more information about you and everyone that you deal with on your phone than I have in my mind. So
That's exactly
it's really
right. And that's kind of one of the debates over access to your smartphone. The courts have generally held that you can demand a fingerprint because that's not testimonial. You're not testifying against yourself, but you can't demand a password. Nevertheless, that phone, unlocking that phone is giving them a lot more than a lock of your hair or your fingerprint.
Yeah, I would rather, if I had the choice of me testifying against myself or my phone, I would choose me because I don't
have a worse memory.
As much, right?
Yeah. Email number two, what is a good app for my iPhone that features restaurants and bars and places to eat that may have been featured on TV shows while I'm traveling in the United States? Restaurant. Well, I don't know. What are you using as you travel around?
We use OpenTable. Now, I don't
love it.
It's wonderful. It's great because you know what's open. You get the ratings to that, and then you can also make the reservation, so you don't have to worry about that. Now, I don't know about being featured on TV, but I would assume
OpenTable's
some of the best.
Great.
And
we use it religiously, but not every restaurant subscribes because OpenTable costs the money. They have to use the OpenTable system. There's another system. Is it Resy? R-E-Z-I?
S-I.
S-Y. R-E-S-Y. It's exactly the same as OpenTable. There it is. And some restaurants that don't use OpenTable use Resy. So I would at least have those two on there and check both of them. Lisa and I became fans of the Zagat Guides. Do you know the Zagat Guides?
No.
These are the best travel guides, and their restaurant reviews are done by readers, and they've always been very accurate in terms of their restaurant ratings. Google bought them, unfortunately, and the Zagat app isn't as good as it used to be, but much of that content is now in Google Maps. So we'll always use what's around me on Google Maps to look for stuff and then look for the Zagat reviews. And then, of course, there's always Yelp.
The only thing I worry about with Yelp is, you know, paid for advertising, and you also get a lot of, like, you know, I sometimes go to a lot
fake
of,
reviews.
Yeah, you see it, and then you go to the restaurant, and you're like, oh, that wasn't exactly what I had hoped for. So we try to avoid.
I agree.
Using Yelp, we might then look at something secondarily after that if there's a high Yelp review.
That's kind of my suggestion: is use them all.
Yeah.
And then collate all of that, and then use your noggin to figure out what's good. At least Yelp gives you a pretty complete directory of everything that's there.
True. And stuff that's close to you.
And I wouldn't necessarily trust the reviews because they come from competitors. Sometimes they come from competitors. Sometimes they come from the owner.
Yeah.
And in both cases, you can't trust those reviews.
Yeah.
But Yelp at least is a good directory of everything there. As seen on TV, well, I'm thinking the Food Network, right? They must have. Does the Food Network, I bet they have an app. You could see what restaurants the Food Network recommends. I don't normally go to restaurants as seen on TV.
We sometimes do, but those are like the real hoity restaurants.
I know what restaurant you and Anthony like a lot. Joël Robuchon.
Oh, yes, yes.
Which happens to be Lisa and my favorite.
Is it also such a great restaurant?
We're going there next week.
Are you?
Yes.
Oh.
In Vegas.
Oh, I'm a little upset. A little jealous there.
It is just the greatest restaurant ever.
It is.
Oh, Georgia, it's so nice to meet you, to finally, you know, see you in person. I've known you for, it feels like, years.
Yeah,
We've worked together on Mac Break Weekly and Twit for a long, long time.
Yeah, it has been.
So nice to see you and Anthony in our studio. Come back anytime.
Thank you so much.
People
Thank
should
you so much.
Check out the videos at anxiety-videos.org.
Yes.
And .com. It's not a nonprofit. And buy every one of them, anxiety-videos.com. And Georgia and Sandra Reich are just fantastic on all these videos. Very helpful, very useful stuff. And then, of course, you're a regular at imore.com. You write there regularly. And you're on some of their podcasts, too?
Yeah, I do some Which of the ones? Podcasts there. I'm
Apple
on the
Talk?
iMore Show.
iMore Show.
We do review. There's all kinds of little different podcasts that we do to that. It's a lot of fun.
Thank you. So nice to see you.
Well, thank you so much. It was wonderful to meet the Twit family.
Yay!
They're like the most amazing.
It's a good people, huh?
Amazing.
I hear you went to Tanya's going away party.
Yes, we had so much fun. We danced. I'm sore. We really did a lot of dancing.
I hear it was a good party.
It was an amazing party. Check out their Twitter feeds. Probably you have There's some
a, pictures. It has, a, it has its own Twitter feed. Wow. That good of a
should.
Party.
It should.
Wow. Wow. Hey, thanks to all of you for joining us. We do the new Screensavers every Saturday afternoon. Well, it's afternoon our time, 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. if you're in the East Coast, and UTC 2200, so you could figure out, you know, when that is relative to your time zone. Please do stop by and join us in the chat room at irc.twit.tv. But, of course, if you can, on-demand audio and video is always available after the fact at twit.tv/NSS or wherever you subscribe to your favorite podcasts. Don't forget to subscribe to our newsletter. It'll give you a look ahead at what's coming up in the week, twit.tv/newsletter. No salesman will call, I promise you. But you'll get a weekly newsletter that's full of good stuff. And I don't want to forget to say you can join us in studio. We always have a wonderful studio audience for the new Screensavers. We love having them. And all you have to do is email tickets at twit.tv. We'll give you directions, information. We'll put a chair out for you. We'll make sure you have a great time. So thanks to all of you for coming and joining us. Thanks to you for watching at home. And we will see you next time on the new Screensavers. Bye-bye, everybody. Yay.